Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
And a Bozeman man, here we go. So you know it's another Maryland man situation. You know it's another Maryland man story when they start their story by describing him as a Bozeman man has been sentenced after pleading guilty to drunk driving and operating without a valid license in Yellowstone National Park. Now, that was the NBC Montana story about a Bozeman man, and you can't really fault NBC Montana with going with the storyline here or leaving some other information out, because they were just sharing the information that they got from the U.S. Attorney's Office down in Wyoming. You know, which, of course, Mammoth is in Wyoming for the, for Yellowstone National Park. And then there's a federal magistrate judge there. But anyway, it says a Bozeman man has been sentenced after pleading guilty to drunk driving and operating without a valid license in Yellowstone National Park. The U.S. Attorney's Office reports that 64-year-old Andres Sanchez Yobal admitted to any, and then they get into the details of the offense here, etc. But anyway, I see this story on X, and then somebody on X with the name Whiskey Montana 99 said this back to NBC Montana: "You conveniently left out that he is also in jail on an ICE hold," and then he's got the laughter emoji. Bozeman man. Have you ever heard, whenever there's a crime story about an illegal alien, it's never like illegal alien from El Salvador or wherever the heck they're from. It's a Bozeman man, Maryland man, Florida man. I mean, just crazy. But anyway, you know, hey, like you guys know, I always do. So I don't just see something on X and just assume it's true. You know, whether it comes from a good source or not, I go verify. So I actually pulled up the jail inmate roster for Gallatin County and did the name search, and yep, there you go. There you go. The ICE hold for immigration there in big bold letters right on the Gallatin County detention facility jail inmate roster. Now, the other thing that I have to check on, and I did reach out to ICE, to U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, is just because somebody is on an ICE hold doesn't necessarily mean that they're an illegal alien. Now, most likely they are. Usually that ends up being the case every time I check to confirm. But it could just be that they're here on some visa and then they get in trouble, and so then they get in hot water with ICE. But almost every single time these days, after the open border invasion of the last 4 years, when we see our jails fill up with ICE holds, almost every single time I've verified, actually I think every single time I've verified it, it ends up being an illegal alien. But you know, unlike the fake news media out there, we want to check, we want to be sure, we want to be accurate. So I shot a note to our ICE contact. I'll let you know when we get the official word. All right, we got some great folks joining us here. We are broadcasting live from Great Falls for the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association annual meeting. Back right after this.
Hey, Dad, how do airplanes fly? What's in this box? Is this tree good for climbing? How are babies made? What does this thing do?
Kids are curious about everything, including guns. Talking to them about gun safety in your home is a good first step, but you can do more. Always keep your guns locked, unloaded, and stored separately from ammunition. Safe gun storage saves lives. Learn how to make your home safer at nfamilyfire.org. That's nfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by nFamily Fire, Brady, and the Ad Council.
Big topics, big ideas. Big Sky, Montana Talks.
Man, the Maryland man, we've got the Anaconda man in the house right now. Jerry Lim, who is the safety and loss instructor for the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association. Good to see you as always, Jerry. How you been?
Doing great, Aaron. How are you?
Yes, there, oh, try that.
We're doing great. Everything's going wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing great. Yeah, it's been a beautiful fall thus far in Montana, but some people are starting to get some moisture. We might get some snow in the high country here later this weekend. So, Yeah, it's doing good. How's everybody in Anaconda doing?
Yeah, we're doing well. The town is thriving. I'm not always sure why, but the town is thriving. It's I love being from there. You know, when I was growing up, it was I want to get out of here, and I never did really leave. My heart was always there, and I love the town. It's a great area. No, but the state is a wonderful state. It really is, and just having an opportunity to work there and live and travel and do what we do, it's a pleasure and a blessing. It really is.
I forget who I was talking to about that very same thing. It might have been at a kids' football game or something like that, but, you know, it's, you know, a lot of Montanans now, because of remote working and things like that, they're able to now come home and kind of bring their job with them. That's been a lot of the growth. It's frankly been fueling co-op country as well, as Montanans kind of coming back home and able to work in places like Anaconda and bring your job back with you. But yeah, they were saying the same thing, that, you know, when you're a kid, you're like, oh, I got to get out of here. This is boring. And I want to go do this, and I want to go do that, and go to all these. And then you go to all these other places, and sometimes all over the world, and you're like, you know what? I'm going to go back to Montana, because you don't realize how great you actually have it here.
Well, you know, and even in all of our jobs, I know I had bad days as an instructor. It's never a bad class. It's a bad day as an instructor. We don't bring the game or something. But, you know, sometimes that's what makes the better days, because then you redo. You realize, yeah, maybe it's not as all bad. I don't think it's bad for young kids listening right now. If they want to get out, because that's how I learned Anaconda, the appreciation of it. Yeah. I left and I come back. You're right. I think sometimes we don't know what we have until we don't have it, or it's gone for a while.
Yeah, yeah, you know, Charlie Kirk, he was a part of Salem Communications and the Salem Media Network, and Hugh Hewitt has been a part of Salem as well, and he wrote a book called In But Not Of, and he actually encourages young people, hey, go live in a big city, even if just for a little bit, just so you know how life is like for them. And but you could almost say it to the big city people too. Hey, you know, you need to go spend some time in flyover country. Go to the Anacondas. Just don't stay too long, because we got enough people already as it is. But because you get that added perspective. And so, yeah, you're right. There's nothing wrong with going out and seeing a little bit of the world. But everybody eventually wants to make it back to Montana.
Well, you know, we've had some really unfortunate things. You know, Montana's a big state now. I mean, we hit 1 million people, and we're suddenly on people's radar because of who we are. The issues we had recently in Anaconda, which was horrendous. Nobody ever thinks that's going to happen here. Fortunately, I think that the exposure we have elsewhere, we go other places, we do learn that it can happen. People in Anaconda have had experiences, they've had classes, they've reached out, and so it devastated our community, but it didn't overrun the community. And I think experience, Aaron, is huge, and you don't get that from sitting home.
Yeah. So. You know, switching topics here, of course, you are the safety instructor for the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association. I was talking with Mark Lambrecht, the CEO, earlier, and you know, all of this cool high-tech farm equipment. I mean, the combines today, the seeders, the everything. It's just so crazy. Like, I was at the Farm Expo in Plentywood earlier this year, and we were just talking about, you know, farm equipment and how, you know, it knows to do more seed in this part of the land and then less seed over here, more water here, less water over there. These things are so high-tech. But what we're seeing now is that these pieces of equipment can do so many things, but we're seeing more collisions with power lines. A lot of them all kind of across the state now that you're starting to see pile up. So it's a good reminder on the safety front.
You know, there's a lot of things that go with that. First off, because of the equipment, it's getting bigger. We've got more people in the field. We've got more diverse crops in our field. I mean, I'd never seen a chickpea before in my life until recently. That's just huge. The other one that I can bring up is drones. We've got a lot of drone impact. People are using drones out there. So our drones are coming in contact with power lines, and it doesn't do the power line any good, and it sure doesn't do the drone any good. But we just had a recent tragedy in Montana on a agricultural incident. One of the things I think, you know, you of all people know and understand communication. And I would think that it's become incumbent upon everybody that's going to work in and around power lines. And let's take our agricultural people to know, to look up, to be aware of what can my machine do and how close can I get. And I think we don't know that farmer has bought a new piece of equipment. So we build a line to be at a certain height that's federally restricted. Here's where we're at. All of a sudden, this new stuff comes out. We can't tell that it's happened until it's too late. So I would encourage our ag people that as you get new equipment, become more experienced with it, get a hold of your cooperative. Let them be aware of what you have and work together. It's communication. We can avoid a lot of tragedy because I think we all get in our lane. Sometimes that lane is pretty tunneled, and it can be tragic if we don't look at it.
Well, and I can see, too, now, there's so much automation in these machines that it can practically do the whole thing for you. I mean, we joke sometimes you could just kick back and listen to the radio and open up a nice can of pop, and it'll make the turns for you and everything. And so it might be so easy then to not realize where the limitations are. And, yeah, you're driving along, and you hear a little pop. What would you do? You would stop. You'd open up the cab. You would get out, maybe stand on the steps, hold on to the metal rail, and look and see what popped behind you. And you may not know that whole area is now electrified.
It could be very well easily the last thing you'll ever do. It takes a lot of that thought train. If something isn't right, if it doesn't feel right, if it, you know, looks like a duck, quacks like a duck kind of thing, that same thing. And if they're going to be in those pieces of machinery and that exposure, they need to be aware of what their surroundings are, what is not natural, what's not right now.
All right, hold that thought. Quick break here on Montana Talks. We'll talk more with Jerry Lim and some of our other guests here right after this. Did you know?
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Hey, that's very cool. We just had one of our listeners, actually from Billings. She's in Great Falls. Marsha just dropped in and said hello here. So I had to get right back on the radio, though. So I was like, hi, bye, got a roll here. But it's so cool when you get a chance to travel across the state and run into our great listeners. I was at the Montana Pro Rodeo Hall and Wall of Fame banquet on Saturday night and just saw some of the best Americans you can find. Of course, they're Montanans, and of course, they love rodeo. Many of them are, you know, there were just so many great rodeo legends that were in that room. But yeah, you get to see people like the Burkharts, like Gloria and Bob, and both veterans. In fact, I was at Safari Club, the Montana chapter, 1 year, I think it was last year, and they brought all the veterans up on the stage, and both Gloria and Bob were up there. And then I got to hearing more of their story, and Bob actually did rodeo in Europe. He would actually rodeo, especially across Germany, because he had all these, you know, military bases there and all these military folks, and the Europeans were just fascinated with rodeo. Well, you got a real deal Montana guy right here. So he was rodeoing across Europe while he was serving his country. But yeah, so great to see so many of the folks at the Montana Pro Rodeo Hall and Wall of Fame banquet. But just, I was just really, frankly, just blown away by how many people came up to me and said how much they listen to the show, how much they appreciate the show, and really just the fight for the American West and the fight to stand up for our Western way of life. It just means so much when we get a chance to see so many of these great folks. Jerry Lim with the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association, we always appreciate what you're doing. But yeah, what more did you want to share, especially for the agriculture community right now? Because yeah, this equipment is so fancy, it might be easy to just think that you can kind of let it run itself, but you are seeing a lot of these unfortunate incidences involving power lines.
But not only do we see a lot of, they're very expensive. Expensive in financial, expensive in time down, expensive, of course, unfortunately, in life. I think I tell the same thing as what I tell our linemen and everybody else I work with. You know, the job isn't the end product. The job is what you're doing at the moment. And I think it's important that if we're going to take that piece of equipment down the road, we pay attention to what we're doing safely. When we're in the field, we're driving. Driving is the job at the moment. Where am I at? I'm under a power line. That's the job at the moment. And I think, Aaron, we're so busy, and our ag people are so busy because they're so compressed in the time available that I think it's easy to forget all the exposures we had. And they have a liability to that and a responsibility. And I still think at the end of the game, you make your living in communication. I think communication is part of what we need to do. Your next guest will be talking about communication. I think it's so important. And I think if they would let us know so that we can help them, the cooperatives, I think it would be huge on everybody's safety. And then, of course, the production, because if they're not in the field, they're not producing.
Well, it's so easy for all of us, frankly. You know, every, you know, newer vehicle now has backup cameras. Some of them have up above cameras, in front, 360 cameras. But it doesn't matter how many cameras you got on that vehicle. There's still a blind spot. So it's sometimes it's even nice to just roll down the window and listen while you're backing up or moving, especially if you're backing up a trailer or something, having, you know, folks get your blinds up. But I know kind of last time we caught up with you, there's that great military terminology of slow is smooth and smooth is fast. And so, yeah, you hear a little pop, slow is smooth, smooth is fast. Sometimes it's better to just sit, hold your position, and you know, before you just hop out and try to analyze the situation.
That's right. The other thing I talk about when it comes to that is what we call the broken window theory. It's so important that when the little things go wrong, it's time to look at the big things as well. When all of a sudden you're going down the field and something is wrong, it's not normal, it's not happening, it's not feeling right, now's the time to literally take the breath before you do anything, because it's not natural. It's not what we were predicting. And when it's not, it's real easy to get yourself lost. Take a breath. Find out where you're at. What are you doing before the next thing you do? Because in electrical terms, it could be the last thing you do.
That's really interesting what you say about the broken window
theory.
Because I've heard the broken window theory when it comes to law enforcement. Like in New York City, back, you know, when they cleaned up New York City and then they let it go to heck again. And, but they talked about the broken window theory, that if you allow a broken window to remain broken, it sends this subliminal message to the criminals out there that, hey, nobody really cares. So now you can get away with doing the bigger things.
Right.
And then you start to see crime escalate even further out of control. So, yeah, when you think about that from an organizational standpoint, is if you have these broken windows within your organization, that also can escalate further out of control.
Sure, it's people being people. I mean, it doesn't really matter where you're putting that mindset. It's people being people. And if we allow mission creep, broken window, whatever you want to call it, if we allow those little things to permeate, they become the big thing. You know, I always say that an accident is never one event. It's a recipe that we build. And if I goof up the amount of salt, it doesn't turn out as bad, but it's still edible. If I get 7 or 8 ingredients wrong, it's a bad recipe. Well, it's the same thing as safety. If I goof one thing up, it may not be the end result, but you line all those things up, and it's the broken window theory.
Yeah, very interesting. You need to write a book or something, or even just like a little quote book, just a, you know, Jerry's Anaconda quote book or something like
that. We call them lemisms.
Well, Jerry, great to see you as always. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for what you do.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, good to see you. All right. Well, next up, you know, one of the cool things for those of you that are members of an electric cooperative, especially if you live in rural Montana, but heck, anymore, how much of rural Montana is no longer really rural Montana because of all the growth, especially in some of our towns, you know, like the west end of Billings, for example. You're pushing into electric cooperative country. North Kalispell, you're pushing into electric cooperative country, where, you know, a lot of the kind of newer subdivisions are being built and things like that. And so, but, you know, great opportunities for kids and for young people. With the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association as well. In fact, she's actually going to be speaking. She is the keynote speaker today for their awards luncheon, and she's a junior at Beaverhead County High School in Dillon. Savannah Nelson is here with us right now. Savannah, good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
You got your speech all written up, ready to go?
Yeah, I have it memorized.
Really?
Yeah.
See, you're way far ahead of me, which is no surprise. So, what's your speech going to be about today?
It's going to be about how the Youth Tour and YLC programs have affected me and changed my life. Like, they've really helped my abilities to speak in front of crowds, and just I've gained leadership qualities that'll help me throughout the rest of my career.
Did I hear right that you're actually from Lima?
So I used to go to school in Lima, but sadly they don't have enough funding to keep the school going, so I had to switch. They're still open right as of right now, but it's gonna go downhill. which is pretty sad. So I've switched to the Beaverhead County High School.
Yeah. Lima, I'll tell you what, the winter can be crazy in Lima. If the interstate is going to shut down anywhere in Montana in the winter, it's going to shut down in Moneta and in Lima, right?
Yeah. No, we had to drive the road every morning at dark all the way to Lima, and there are some pretty bad roads. We saw a lot of crashes.
Yeah. Especially if you're playing sports and you got to travel to practice or to and from. Did you grow up on a ranch or in town, or what was life like in Lima?
So I live in Dillon, but I used to go to school in Lima. We have a little house with a couple acres. It's not a ranch or anything, but we own some horses and we had some pigs for a while. But we've mainly just worked with our horses and had some cats and dogs.
So you referenced the youth tours. So you got to go to Washington, D.C. So the Electric Cooperative Association, every year they do a youth tour to Washington, D.C. What made you want to be a part of that trip? And then what was the trip like?
So it first started, we got a letter sent home, and my parents talked to me about it. And then Jackie Sutton at the Lima High School talked me into signing up for it. And so I wrote my letter, and I ended up winning for going on youth tour, and it was such an amazing trip for me. I got to see like a whole different world. When you've lived in Montana, Washington, D.C. is kind of like really crazy to see. It's a whole different culture, and seeing all those monuments in person just kind of like blows your mind. I haven't seen as much architecture as that, but I also got to make a ton of friends. And it was just overall a really good trip and experience for me.
So you had kids from all over Montana, different cooperatives. Do they send a couple of kids from each co-op or one kid from each cooperative, basically?
So I think it depends on how big the cooperative is. My cooperative sends two kids. I think some would send two or one, just depending on how much land they have.
You know, our country is approaching our 250th birthday next year, so it's going to be a big 4th of July next year, of course. But being in our nation's capital, what impacted you the most, or what do you remember the most? What was the most compelling? What some of the architecture or the monuments that stood out to you that you remember the most?
I think one, just seeing all, like, you always see pictures of a lot of those monuments online, but I think being there in person just was really breathtaking. I think the Holocaust Museum stood out to me a lot because you hear a lot about that in history, but it's a really sad moment in history, and being at a museum that has quotes from the people who were there just really kind of, it was a sad moment. And yeah, I just really like getting to be there and getting to see more about the Holocaust.
You guys actually went through the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm glad they do that, because I feel like so many people right now, because when I was a kid, like, there were movies about the Holocaust. Like, it was a big emphasis to teach people and educate people about the horrors of the Holocaust. And now, especially in the wake of the October 7th terrorist attacks against Israel, I feel like it's like people have forgotten, or they're choosing to forget, or they're choosing to ignore it.
Yeah, I think it's something that we definitely need to remember, because it is a really sad time in history. And it's just good to remember the mistakes that were made so we don't repeat them, I guess. And it's good to remember the people who went through it and the people who survived.
Well said. So when you talk about the youth tour and you talk about the YLC, the Youth Leadership Council that you're a part of as well, what's the most important message you want to communicate to this group today? And we have 30 seconds before the break.
I think it's definitely a good idea to sign up for the Youth Tour and YLC Council. It really has broadened my view on, one, what I can achieve. I've gotten to listen to a lot of speakers, and it's helped me phenomenally in FFA and BPA.
Can you stick around, join us for a few more minutes?
Yeah.
Because our listeners love hearing from young people and what young people are concerned about, are interested about, what young people think about current events and all the craziness of the world. So if you can, stick around. We'll talk more with Savannah Nelson out of Dillon, Montana, right after this. And by the way, if you want to send us a message, shoot us a message on the Montana Talks app, and we can share your message over the air. Stand by. Back after this.
This is where Montana Talks at with Lane Nordland.
Montana State University's new president, Dr. Brock Tessman, is a few months on the job, and he experienced his first MSU homecoming this past weekend. I sat down with him during a live Western Ag Network broadcast from the Rock and R Bar during the homecoming parade, and he had this message to Montana's farmers and ranchers.
I mean, it starts and ends with agriculture. We are a land-grant university. We're a Montana State University. One of the first things I had the privilege of doing is getting out and around the state also through some extension offices, but we're up at the Northern Ag Research Center outside of Haver and just coming to appreciate what the university does to support producers around the state. And, you know, that'll never stop. We're so proud of that. It's in our DNA, and it's about what's next and how we can get better.
What was it like to jump on that experiment station combine harvester and drive that and help put up the crop?
I told everybody up there, I mean, first of all, I didn't wreck the thing, but I also realized I better not quit my day job. You know? But it's amazing. I mean, it is our connection to every corner of the state. And you go around the state of Montana, whether it's TUDOT, whether you're in Libby, you're down in the Bitterroot, it's bobcats everywhere. And I would never have it any other way. That will never stop at Montana State University.
For more of his comments during the MSU Homecoming Parade, visit Lane Nordlund Ag Broadcaster on Facebook. Go Bobcats. I'm Lane Nordlund.
That's my...
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, in just a few minutes here, we're going to catch up with Doug Hardy. Doug Hardy is the general manager for Central Montana Electric Power Cooperative as we are here at the Heritage Inn in Great Falls for the 64th annual meeting for the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association. But he just recently celebrated 50 years in the industry. 50 years in the industry. So looking forward to catching up with Doug here in just a few minutes. 50 years, yeah. Savannah, can you imagine what 50 years must feel like? That's just working, let alone high school and everything else, right? So you're a junior at Beaverhead County High School. I got to ask you, without me injecting topics or ideas or anything else, our listeners, I mentioned it before the break, our listeners really love hearing from young people. You're in high school right now. They love hearing from young people. What are young people concerned about? What are they optimistic about? What are they concerned about? What's going on in the life of young people in this day and age right now?
I think a lot of young people are a bit concerned about, one, their future, because I think being prepared for your future is kind of scary, and being in high school getting ready to graduate is pretty scary. And I definitely like how a lot of these programs like this are trying to prepare us for our future. They're giving us opportunities to take leadership positions, which will help us in our future career and prepare us for college. And any leadership opportunities we can take will definitely just help us prepare for graduating high school. And so I think that's definitely a big concern throughout a lot of the youth of today.
You were talking about maybe going into business, maybe going to law school, maybe becoming a firefighter. All the above sound great, right? What do young people feel like about the current state of our country or the future of our country? You know, you talk about kind of personal, you know, concerns about, hey, what's life going to hold from, you know, a job standpoint and family standpoint, right? But what about our country? What are young people thinking right now?
I think it goes both ways, just depending on how your parents are at the household. But I think a lot of us are optimistic because as we get older, we'll get to, like, change the future. We'll get to be a part of America and start running the jobs and the leadership positions. So I think there's a lot of optimism.
Yeah, and obviously young people, just like older people, have different viewpoints, different perspectives, different political beliefs and all. How does something like this high-profile assassination of a younger, you know, commentator like a Charlie Kirk, how has that kind of impacted young people? And again, not even necessarily from a political standpoint, but just from a, you know, just from an impact standpoint.
I think it's definitely impacted a lot of youth. I think it's kind of scary to think that our freedom of speech and that people are getting shot over it. But I definitely think it's inspiring a lot more people to pick up the mic and express their freedom of speech and express how they feel about our world and our politics and how it should be run. So
that's great. So instead of being intimidated by it, which is what anybody who would commit a terrorist act would want to do, they would want you to be intimidated. They would want you to cower in fear. And instead, what you're saying is, no, young people are saying, we're not going to let that type of terrorist attack intimidate us. In fact, now we're more likely to stand up and say what we believe, et cetera. Val, that's great to hear. Wow. Well, great to see you, Savannah Nelson. Anything else you want to tell folks all across Montana?
Just sign up for U Tour and the Wild Sea programs. It's been a great experience for me, and it'll definitely benefit you.
All right. Well, great. Best of luck at your speech today. I know it's going to go great.
Yeah.
All right. Now let's switch over now. Let me double check my mic settings. Yeah, let's go now to Doug Hardy. Been a while since you were on a youth tour there, probably, Doug. Actually, I'll tell you what. You know what? I'm hearing a little weird sound in my headset. I'm going to have you grab Savannah's headset there. She had the good microphone there. Have you use that one instead there. All right. Yeah, Doug, good to see you, as always. I think I've been coming to these electric cooperative meetings now for, 20, maybe 25 years. I'm trying to think when my first Mecca meeting would have been, but you've been there for every single one of them. So,
yeah, about 46 of them.
Yeah. 50 years. I was just joking. It's been a while since you were on a youth tour, probably.
There was youth in my youth.
Yeah.
It's been gone a long time.
How has the industry changed in 50 years working in the industry? I mean, I know, like, I can see the Lincoln Electric Cooperative sign up on the, up on the balcony above us here. And I remember talking with Mike Cuff, a state senator out of Eureka. He actually remembers when they first turned the lights on in parts of Lincoln County. I mean, he would tell the stories of steamships that would travel up the river. I mean, you know, and it's really not that long ago. I mean, if we were to ask some of these young people, they would think that was, you know, centuries ago. But it's really not that long ago that we turned the lights on in parts of Montana.
Yeah, it is really thrilling to be a part of it. When I think about when I first came in compared to now, there is so much more maturity to the organizations. There, we were kind of looked at as maybe the people from the country as opposed to, you know, professional utilities, which we are, and now we're respected as that, and kind of get a leadership roles within the industry, and a lot of people work really hard to make sure that they're on top of the technology, top of the safety aspects, top of being a good communicators with the members, to where, you know, the strength that we have is the members, the ratepayers at the end of our lines. And if we make every decision based on their interests, life is good.
Yeah, that's right. Life can be a little crazy at times. In fact, we saw the Gretchen, who, you know, runs the electric cooperative out of Malta, and just ran into her briefly, and it's like, man, you've had fires, you've had floods, all sorts of crazy stuff going on, yet they've still kept the lights on or gotten them back on very quickly soon after, you know, chaos might strike.
Yeah, Mother Nature is pretty good at proving that she can outdo man. We can build anything stout as stout can be, and still, at some event, nature can throw at us. But we're good at getting it back on.
Yeah. What are some of the biggest challenges ahead just for the power industry in general? Massive amount of demand out there. I think, what are we? We're set to lose, 10 gigawatts of power in, what, the next 10 years or so? And not only are we set to lose that much power, but we're supposed to add practically that much power to meet all the demand that's out there. And yet we have all of these organizations and interests trying to block us from meeting that demand.
Yeah, we're in an interesting place and have been for a while. If you look at renewable generation, we put in a lot of it at the generating side of the equation that I represent. But what's really surprising is how many people don't realize what it takes to have the power when the wind's not blowing, when the sun's not shining. And I think there's just an easy answer for people that want to think the easy route, and that's to say, well, we'll just build a bunch of batteries. You'd have to have enough batteries to go months without power if you do the studies of where we're at. So that's not saying that won't happen, but it's going to be with a different technology than we have today, at a different price than we have today. So we have a mix of generation that what's going off is largely the base load generation that you can step on the throttle on. And I am concerned about when we get that week and a half of 30 or 40 below that Montana can have, and like 83. When that happens, you better have something that you had a throttle on that had plenty of fuel and ability to keep everything on, because those obscure skies at 40 below don't give you as much solar, and at 40 below the wind is shutting off to protect itself. So it's really important resources for providing energy, but we still have to have other things providing capacity.
Yeah. I'm trying to think where to go next here. I'm just trying to think, let's focus on data centers for a second, because that's big economic opportunity for parts of Montana right now. Butte's eyeing a $4 billion data center that they're looking to lure into the area, which could be, good economic development in the eyes of Butte Silverbow, but that's a massive amount of energy they're going to need. And right now, from what we're hearing, is everybody is tapped out, and they need more energy supply. And so you get a new big customer online, where are they going to get the energy from right now?
Yeah, they may want to put generation in themselves. But then that what happens with that generation as far as when it's not going? Where are you going to provide it from, and it takes transmission to do it? If you have to put $100 million into a transmission upgrade, or I'm aware of some that are in the billion-dollar marks, who pays is the question. And residential is high enough. To the degree that we end up ramping up residential costs, we've harmed ourselves. So it's so critical for policymakers to come up with solutions that the data centers that are harvesting the return are able to pay for the upgrades of transmission to where they're not left with others. Now, new load.
How you do it is the key. Yeah, hold that thought. Quick break here on Montana Talks. We'll talk more with Doug Hardy right after this.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we'll be back in studio tomorrow, taking your phone calls and more with Wednesday's Montana Talks. And then Thursday, I'm in Whitefish for the Montana Equipment Dealers Convention. And then Friday, we're going to be broadcasting live from Northwest Parts and Equipment in Columbia Falls. Our last live remote show we did from the Flathead, when we were out on the town, we were at Mountain Pass Safes and Coins in Kalispell. And I think that's when I met Kevin in Kalispell, who just left a call-in message for us. He says, I was in the timber industry for 60-plus years. Are co-ops looking at the use of biomass for generating electricity? Doug Hardy, I don't know if you can weigh in from Central Montana Electric Power Cooperative standpoint, but I think that topic actually came up at an energy forum hosted by Flathead Electric Cooperative. So I know they have been talking about, the governor's been talking about that in particular. Any thoughts from you?
Yeah, we don't have it on our radar on this side of the state, at least. Not that it won't be, but it's not one that, with the economies of scale and the reliable source of fuel that we've looked at on our mix.
Yeah, that's it. It sounds like a good opportunity, though, especially in light of the Healthy Forests Initiative, where they, clear more of a path from a fire protection standpoint around these power lines. Well, hey, why not? You could use those trees you cut down for biomass or what have you. What opportunities do you see out there for rural Montana, for economic development? Data centers, could be an opportunity. And, if you've got oil and gas already there, for example, well, why not take that gas that you're pulling off of an oil well site to power a data center right there? And now that county is going to be making revenue triple fold off of that operation. What opportunities do you see out there?
My focus is so much on affordability and reliability that my expertise isn't the economic development lead down the road. I can tell you this, everything we look at, whether it's on generation source, be it biomass or whatever, is affordability and reliability. So you say, through that lens, when anything becomes cost effective, even recovery off of a gas line, so big pumping gas lines across the country with compressors that give off heat. We have technology that gets harvest electricity, regenerate from those plants. So, you know, we're looking at anything that they would do it, but it has to be looked through the lens of affordability and reliability.
Yeah, well, and so at the end of the day, reliability, that's why coal is still so important. That's why these natural gas power plants are so important. Do you think that we've invested too heavily in so-called green energies, you know, wind and solar over the past 20 years or so, and is it time to refocus?
I wouldn't put it in terms of invested too heavily. I will say the federal government has a huge investment because it has different magnitudes of subsidy on anything you do, but it's pretty high. That said, I believe even without that subsidy, there would be portions that go in that it's a, you know, the fuel cost is zero. Capturing it isn't zero, but the fuel cost is zero. So as long as you put in that equation what's it take to generate when it's not producing, then you're being fair in your analysis.
You've, you know, 50 plus years now with the electric cooperatives. Why do you think the electric cooperatives have been so effective over the years?
We listen to our members. I mean, each member gets to go to their annual meeting and vote for who represents them, and they're represented by their own people. It's somebody in the membership that becomes a trustee that gets extensive education. They're the decision makers. They're the governance. And I guess when you talk broadly on that, if you look on the political side of it, we represent the same people. Our members are their constituents. And it's, as long as we're taking care and keep our focus on issues that are pertinent to affordability and reliability, and we go to the legislature with great technical knowledge and also an open mind, we're able to lobby issues. That's why we've been so successful on the legislative side, is we're lobbying the issues. We're not lobbying for this philosophical thing or that philosophical thing. We're talking about the issues that affect affordability and reliability for people at the end of the line.
Well, and you look at, you know, over the last 4 years of the previous administration in Washington, we saw national electricity inflation go up 30% all across the country. And thankfully, at least the co-ops I've been a part of have not seen that type of electricity inflation because of that effective leadership. But also, you look around the room here right now, and folks can hear everybody gathering over coffee here during one of the breaks. To what you just said, Doug, like, these organizations are run, their boards are local business people, farmers and ranchers, people that get elected to serve on those boards. So when you show up at the Montana Capitol, they know they're talking to real Montana, not just somebody who's paid to be there to flack for a certain company. You're talking to real Montana when the co-ops show up.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to represent them when I'm up there. And by the way, every session I've been at since 81, I have been. It hasn't been compensated. It was volunteer stuff. And that's a co-op thing. When you look at these trustees, they may get a per diem for a meeting. They don't have pay. They have maybe a meeting fee. They're doing it for belief, for cause, for the right thing. They're helping their neighbors.
Are you going to show up at the next legislative session just for fun, even in retirement?
Fun in retirement will be grandkids. If not for grandkids, I would be up there in all earnest. But I am sure my phone will be ringing from time to time. I probably won't have much of a presence in Helena, but the phone will be ringing.
Well, Doug Hardy, congrats on a great career, and thanks for joining us here on Montana Talks.
Thank you, Aaron.
All right, back in studio tomorrow, taking your phone calls and more. I think John Jackson, the Joker from X, is going to join us. So we'll have to call it Unwoke Wednesday if the Joker is going to be in the house, covering a range of topics.